right, so we have the Scott family, the Carey family, and Jose's family all. Your tickets will be downstairs in the lounge at next break when I can run these down. But how about the next set for people that can't get to 16th Street and Northern this Saturday morning? We'll mail you two passes for the next five people that just text in State Parks to 411-923, and we'll send you two passes, good for one adult and one child each. So a family of four would be covered at any of the 35 state parks where there is a per-person fee, or it'll cover the vehicle. You could stack nine people inside your car and get in with the per-vehicle pass. So text 411-923, the next five families. Obviously, send us your address. We need to know where to send these tickets. We'll get them dropped in the mail later today. So we kept Dr. Sky on for another segment because I didn't get all the information I was looking for, and we were going to break. So asteroid 4 to 10 million miles away, not a big deal.
Nope.
3,000 miles, still not breaking the atmosphere. What's that critical point where it breaks the atmosphere? What distance are we looking at?
Well, Romy, if you and I were to go up into space, 62 miles is considered that Kármán line, as they call it in space, meaning that's the transition between the atmosphere and outer space.
So 62 miles.
62 miles, which isn't really much. I mean, you drive for what? It's less the drive than Phoenix, let's say, to Tucson, to go to outer space. But the point is, depending on the size of the object, you would start to see some of this, the Earth's atmosphere, of course, the frictional heating that would be on the front edge or the leading edge of these objects. The smaller, the better, of course. But if we go back 65 million years ago and look at a 6 or 7 kilometer wide object, believe me, I'm sure, and I wasn't there, nor were you, nor were the listeners, this object maybe started to break apart well before that line. But where the heating is taking place, this would be hellacious. And not to scare people this morning, the good news is, of all the objects that we hear about, there's nothing that we know of that's, you know, directly, at least that's what we're told, going to hit the Earth anytime soon. And most of these asteroids, this is the strange part, a lot of these asteroids were discovered not until after the closest approach. Go scratch your head, folks, on that, because that means if the object were to have come close to the Earth or hit the Earth, this particular asteroid group is discovered after its close approach. So we didn't have any warning of anything impending like that. Interesting.
Well, how many light years is the known universe?
Well,
galaxies?
We could go on. Here's the simple answer this morning. If it's 13.5 billion years when it was created, we're looking on side to side from the expansion now. We're probably looking at over 50 billion light years easily from edge to edge with all the expansion. And remember, the funny part, when I was talking to your dad here on the show, I was telling people that the speed of light, which we talk about in some 186,282 miles per second, that's a hard-to-understand number. So in regular Earth terms, in miles per hour, the speed of light is 670 million miles an hour, which puts it into perspective, because right now, as you look at the planet Jupiter, of those planets that I talked about, Romy, it's about 520 million miles. So even in 1 hour's time by light speed, it would only go out 670 million miles only.
So you're saying the chances of getting hit, you know, there's a lot of factors in that. There's a lot of space.
Right. There's many, many factors. But the good news, so everybody rest assured this beautiful Saturday morning, is nothing that we know of with great specificity. And by the way, real quick, the comet that's the parent of this Perseid meteor shower that we've been watching, we were just up in Sedona doing our big event up at the Sedona Rouge. Well attended, and thank you folks for showing up. But the parent comet of all those meteors is a comet called Swift-Tuttle. And of all the objects that are known, this is the object that passes closest to the Earth on a regular basis. But still, there's no impact indicator for an exact year. Some were saying that in the year 21-something, this object could strike the Earth. And if it were, you don't want a comet nucleus striking. They're usually 5 to 10 miles in diameter, maybe up to 25 miles, and they're traveling faster than most bullets, faster than, let's say, people who know, you know, calibers. 308, 223 travels very quickly. So the point is, comets are really the fastest objects moving through the solar system, but no worry right there. We're in good shape, at least we think, for our lifetime.
So what is the differential between a comet and an asteroid? Is it size? Is it speed?
It's really where they came from. The comets sit way out, and if we looked at Pluto as an old planet, now a dwarf, way beyond that, there's a big band of material called the Oort cloud, named after this Danish astronomer. It's literally at the far edge of the solar system. Most of these little dormant frozen snowballs, as they used to call them, sit out there. Asteroids, for the most part, are remnants of something that happened, maybe a collision, something, or the remaining particles of the solar system creation between Mars and Jupiter. The comets have an icy surface on them, and they may also, Romy, have some of the building blocks of life on them. So the comets are way far out in the solar system, and they travel at great speeds once they get pulled in by gravity. Asteroids, there's so many of them, and that's the good and bad news. They usually lie within that orbit. The plane of their orbit is between Mars and Jupiter, but they're moving through the solar system at random with different groups at different speeds. So it's a pretty busy highway out there, don't you think?
Whew. It's a very fascinating world you live in.
Amazing world we all live in, Romy, because let me say this. You were just talking before about the beauty of the night sky. And you know something? I originally came from the New York City area where I did a lot of my broadcast stuff many, many years ago. That was ancient history. But here in Arizona, wow, well, what's there not to love? Even if we're deep in a monsoon, as you guys were talking about the beauty of the clouds and stuff. And hey, I want to mention real quick, we've got two more amazing events. We've got the Dolly Steamboat for those folks. I keep hearing this. People tell me, and thank you and your family on the show, because the response has been great. Saturday, September the 29th, and Saturday, October the 27th. And I think the 29th one is getting pretty full, but wasn't that amazing? I mean, it's just a great place to see the sky if you're that close to City Light and you can't travel to, let's say, the Grand Canyon. It's a beautiful place, Arizona, and needless to say, I'm just lucky to be part of it, and it's just an amazing place to be, right, Romy?
And
so
that's the Dolly Steamboat in the
Canyon Lake.
Canyon Lake.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and we do the cruises monthly out there, and we're just told by popular demand people seem to enjoy it, not only from my show here on KTAR, but, of course, your legacy show. And congratulations to you and your family for being here on this radio station, a great station, of course, for the longevity here. What, 30 plus, almost 30 years, am I correct?
This is the 30th.
Well, congratulations. That's amazing.
Well, thank you, sir, and thanks for your Saturday time, giving up your Saturday morning to enlighten us or darken us.
I like the first category better.
On what we'll see in the night skies and... it's drsky.com?
Yes, but I actually go to the ktar.com website because the current information that I have is right off the blog there for Dr. Sky. And so many interesting things we write about there. Plus, you can get a free download of a star chart and also look at the satellite map. So when you go out in your backyard, Romy, and you're cooking or people listening, and they can say, hey, in 10 minutes over the top of my barbecue grill, the space station is going to come. You become an instant wizard of the sky. And most of your guests are going to be going, how the heck did you know that? And, of course, you'll be the shining star learning about satellite passages if you check that out at ktar.com for the Dr. Sky blog.
I'm writing it down. That's my to-do on the next break. Thank you, sir.
Have a good day. Thank you so much.
You too. Thank you. So a little bit of clarity on the Mars full moon tomorrow night. We appreciate you coming in. He was in a very loud restaurant last night, and we were kind of joking about what is it about restaurants that they've got to always be so loud. You can't ever just go enjoy a quiet meal. But he went outside, and we talked about it, and I said, tell me what is going to happen. And he started going through all the details about the Mars and the time passing and the distance. I think, yeah, this is too much. We're just going to have you on live.
So was Mars visible when you saw that last night? Or
no, but it prompted just looking at the moon, it prompted that, hey, isn't Mars supposed to be really big and look as big as the full moon? And
that was July 31st, because I went out in my driveway, and fortunately the monsoon storms were between, but I had a clear sky, and it was bright red. And he said, that's Mars. No other planet looks like that. It's amazing.
So did you buy the glasses for the big solar eclipse a couple weeks before that?
I did not, no. When it comes to solar eclipses, you know, I go back to when I was in third grade, they were teaching us how to use two sheets of paper, put a pinhole through it for a solar eclipse, and you can watch it from there. It's not as exciting. I'd rather go up to Flagstaff and see it on the big telescope.
Up at Lowell Observatory. Yeah. You know, there's no one good website for everything you can do in Arizona. So we were talking, we had the Arizona Game and Fish elk bugling. That was off their website. We were talking about the Lost Dutchman full moon hike, Karshner Cavern sunset hike. That came off of Arizona State Parks website. Well, visitarizona.com has a 13-page front and back printout listing of all the things just in the next month that are going around the state. One in particular in Tucson. If you are, when we go into September, it'll be landscape month here at Rosie on the House following our home maintenance calendar. And our first article talks about where to go look in Arizona. If you are designing or remodeling your landscape, or you've got an area of your yard yet to be developed, you want to do a little cactus garden or a little water feature, whatever the case, places you can go see incredible landscapes, botanical gardens, the Xeriscape Garden. And one on that list is the Tucson's Desert Museum, and they have an annual plant sale coming up. You can go to desertmuseum.org. I have not been there. I'm going to make a point when we're down there for the Saba Home Show to go spend a day at the Desert Museum, because everyone that has been there says it is, you know, no matter where in Arizona you are, it's worth a day drive just to go see Tucson's Desert Museum. So they have a big plant sale coming up. There's Camp Verde's Colonial Daughter Contest. I'm guessing that's a costume contest of the old days. You've got the 6th annual Taste America weekend going on at Shadow Mountains in Phoenix. The list just goes on and on. 6th annual Wilcox Flyer bike ride. You know, there is so much to do, and this is the time of year that we can really get out and enjoy it. And we'll be sending y'all, as many of our listeners as we can, with Arizona State Parks passes. So while you're out and about, you can go see any one of our great 35 state parks here in Arizona. Compliments of the Arizona State Park and Sue Black. We appreciate y'all providing these for our listeners. And it's about due time to get the state parks back in. I think we're about on our 6-8 week interval. We need an update here.
Yeah, 3 weeks ago, well, 3 months ago, the state parks were open, but, you know, there were no campfires or anything. But thanks to a very healthy monsoon, things are back to some normalcy.
When we went to our annual summer camping trip, we go for a week, and that's always been what forest can you have fires in? So we've ended up, and we always try and go someplace new. We never want to go to the same place again, just, you know, it's a sense of adventure. Finding the camp spot is half of the adventure, and finding new places. Well, we went deep into the White Mountains knowing there was a fire restriction, but thinking if there's any place that's going to have a chance of rain and the restrictions lifted so we could have a little campfire, it's going to be the White Mountains. Well, that never happened. And this is the only time I've been in the woods 4 or 5 days in a row without a campfire. But what we did get to do instead is at dark, we would get the spotlight, and we would just drive the country road spotlighting. And the White Mountains feel like the old day of the White Mountains. There was, after the Wallow Fire.
The Wallow Fire.
You know, it was like scorched earth. But, I mean, we tried to start a list of all the wildlife we saw. We saw turkeys. We saw the Mexican wolf. We saw
a Mexican wolf the wild. Wow.
Yeah.
I've never seen one.
You know what? It was daylight, and he was in the same spot 2 days in a row stalking the cattle in the field. We saw a fox. We saw tons of birds. We saw antelope. I mean, the amount of wildlife we saw, it felt like the good old days of the White Mountains. And that time spotlighting at night, something the kids had never done before. Coming from Louisiana, that's just something. That's what you do on a Friday night spotlighting with a bow.
A couple of adult pops and just, you know, maybe a line in the water, and you might get lucky, catch a fish or two.